You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, this week is not like it was last week. And we started last week on a horrible footing, and there's been some stabilisation since then. And everyone now looking forward to Wednesday's US inflation data as if it's going to make a difference to the September the 18th decision from the US Federal Reserve. It will, of course, but I don't think that Powell can afford to hold off no matter what the inflation data says on Wednesday.
No, I think, you know, technically there's a belief because people can work out what it was last year and more or less where it is now. So they still think there might be a slight tick up in the inflation rate, but I think it's done and dusted. I don't think it's going to derail views that rates must start come down. You know, you've got to read the room as well. The market's ready for it. The economies are ready for it. They need some kind of boost, stimulus. Lindsay, I've been going through, quite a few articles and trying to work out, okay, where do we position ourselves? You know, what did we get out of the results? You know, what were the good results? What were the indifferent results? And to be honest, I don't think there's any change yet. It's still the tech companies that are leading and still coming out of the big numbers. We can make stories up and say, oh, you know, we're very upset with we're not monetizing AI yet, and therefore be careful. You know, you can get those kind of stories. But I think at the end of the day, when you look at what's likely to come still in terms of growth, it's still in the tech and still the same companies. It's not ready for some of the consumer businesses down below that to challenge them. So I think we're just going to bumble along, just go nowhere until we actually get that interest rate cut or maybe one or two more before bullishness returns to the market in a big way, before people believe that it's time to so-called rotate.
Yeah, I think it's actually a good time of year for the sell-off that we saw last week and the volatility that we saw last week to happen because, people are on holiday, for goodness sake. I mean, the whole of Europe is on holiday. The month of August for the French, now that the Olympics are over, they go down to the south of France. And the rest of Europe, I mean, half of Germany is where I am at the moment, in the south of the Netherlands. So there's things going on. And the United States, the same. I mean, all the big shots are in the Hamptons or wherever it is, or in the Bahamas or something. So I think
they're there. Yeah. And it's still another couple of weeks before the schools start to open. I think I just asked my daughter earlier on, I said, when the kids going back? And she said, I think another 2 weeks or thereabouts. There's my grandson's a junior, my granddaughter a senior, and I think they welcome all the new kids, show them around, and so on. It's the early, they start training for football and they start training for track and things like that. Yeah. So we're getting there, but it's still this is the last throw of the holidays. And after that, people get settled in and so on. So I think you're right. I think we're going to, while everybody's away, nobody wants to be bothered. No,
I agree with you.
With this stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so the market can be pushed around by small orders. China's also a little bit of a concern. I saw another feature on the Chinese property market today. The true facts of what happened there are extraordinary. I mean, how they were allowed to go ahead they weren't just building a tower block and a couple of apartments.
The size of
they were building towns, for goodness sake.
No. It's just classic. It's classic property collapses. Always happens. Just overextend themselves. Borrow against it, in order to develop, sales start to fall, and that sets off, this downward spiral which puts pressure on the developers and the owners and so on. So, yeah, and it's nothing's being done to kind of turn it around in a big way. So China, for me, is the one kind of, the soft underbelly of the market. I think we're getting used to it, but it's playing out in resources. Iron ore price below 100, copper here and there, trying to make some kind of recovery, but nothing of major consequence. So, it's still, we're waiting for Tencent's results. I think they come out maybe tomorrow or something, just to give you some idea of tech earnings. But
they'll be good as always. They'll be excellent. Yeah. I'm absolutely certain. But talking about commodities, with the latest developments between Ukraine and Russia, it's ramped up oil and it's ramped up natural gas prices. And I'm waiting for wheat to come next because, as you've probably been following, Ukraine has made incursions into Russia. I think their troops are 30Ks in there, and they've been ripping down Russian flags and sticking up the Ukraine blue and yellow flag, which has clearly infuriated Putin. He's just completed a press conference, and they'll be held to pay. I mean, he's not going to sit down and say, okay, well, fair play. He's not. He's going to get even more aggressive towards his foe, Zelensky. It's so ridiculous. It's 2.5 years now, David. 2.5 years.
I know, it's mad. It's just utterly insane. That we should be in a situation. And the worst is that you're a young kid growing up in Russia or Ukraine. You know, kids, I talk about even Israel or in the Gaza, you know, and certainly, you know, I know so many young people. They don't want to. They want to do what we're doing.
Yes.
Want to go watch football or watch the Olympics or go to a restaurant and flirt, whatever it is.
Mm.
Get on the internet. They don't want to go play soldier, and just lose their lives at the age of 18, 19, 20. They don't want to be heroes. You know, I just find it insane, honestly, that at a time like this that we have to be, you know, that you have to still have these kind of wars. And Russia, they've lost, the Gaza, the Middle East was nothing compared with the number of people who've been maimed or killed. Russians, I don't know the Ukrainian numbers, but it's insane.
Yes, and you see, what it's doing for the future of Russia is it's taking a group of young men who have been conscripted, and it's obliterating them. So what does that mean for the future demographics, for the future population? These young men are there. They can't find a lovely Russian wife and have children like they normally would in peacetime. And there's more of them being conscripted in. They're like cannon fodder. They're not experienced. You go into the army, you have a week's training, and they send you to the Crimea or something. It's really unfair. I mean, that's a polite way to put it.
I did 9 months training. I did 9 months conscription.
Yeah.
And, I think in the entire time that I was there, I might have shot nine times at a target. I think I missed it every time. You know, that's please, man, what can you learn? You know, and you haven't got your heart in it. You don't want to be there.
No.
You know, that's the whole point. And we know the lesson from Vietnam. You know, what it did to the American nation. It just tore it apart.
Mm.
It took, you know, it took a generation for it to recover. So, you're taking out a whole, you know, a lot of young people and that. It might not sound a lot, you know, where you've got, I don't know how many millions, but it's all of a certain age group.
Exactly. It makes a big hole in the normal format of the demographic pyramid, if you like. Okay. The Brent crude oil price has crept above $80 a barrel. The natural gas price, as I said earlier, it's up about 4.25% today. It's all because of what we've just been speaking of. But then I look at Sasol. And I don't know, David, this annoys me. I'm just going to read to you from the trading statement. It says that earnings for the year ended 30th of June 2024 decreased by more than 100%.
Yeah.
Hello? And is impacted by the following notable non-cash adjustments. Net loss of 55.8 billion rand after tax, 75.4 billion gross on remeasurements items, mainly due to the following impairments. And there's two, which I won't go into. But Chemicals America ethane value chain, and it goes through all the list of different chemicals, polyethylene and everything else. And then after that, Secunda Liquid Fuels Refinery, they lost they've been impaired to the tune of 5.7 billion. I look at this and I think, I don't know too much about the individual chemical prices because I can't track that on my particular website, but I know about the oil price. It's at an elevated level. And with the rand where it is, I think this must be gross incompetence for a succession of managers at Sasol. I think I think it's disgraceful.
Well, you know, you try. They started out as a as an operation that was built rather to protect against sanctions in the apartheid era. That's what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they started. It's quite important to know its origin.
Yes.
You know, they needed, so they improved a technology that was developed by the Germans, converting coal into oil. I'm talking not, you know, into petrol, to just for ease of reference. And then came, things started to change. And they suddenly found, hold on a second, no sanctions against us. We now have to kind of reposition ourselves. And they repositioned themselves into chemicals, you know, which was close to to what they were doing, to the operations that they were used to. So, I mean, that's how it started. And it's been a very difficult route for them. And of late, with chemical prices falling simply because there's no demand and there's a lot of competition, it's been, you know, it's been extremely difficult. And then they went on and put, I don't know, 500 billion rand into
Lake
Louisiana.
Charles. Yeah.
You know, Lake Charles. I mean, it's a disaster. You know, when I say disaster, I'm in terms of what they're producing out of it now relative to the amount of input, I mean, it has been an unmitigated disaster.
That's management.
The market cap of Sasol today. I keep making those Freudian slips. It's going to cost me one day. Sasol today is probably 80 billion. In fact, I'm going to look it up now as we talk. The market cap of Sasol is 81 billion. It was a 500 billion company.
Hmm.
So that's what's been destroyed. And all they're doing now is recognizing that the investments that they've made in chemicals are grossly overstated, and they will never make any money on that. So they bring it down. You know, these are the journal entries. So it's a complete, not fabrication, it's a mask to keep impairing. And yes, it's very good for management because it resets the, you know, the baseline. But I mean, this is money lost.
Yeah, you'll have to explain. We should do an asset, something called the asset class, or something, something to do with teaching people like me about write-downs and write-offs and impairments. That's the first thing I would start with, and you'd be very good at that. So we'll discuss that. But if you lose money and you call it an impairment, what's the difference between just saying, "Well, we lost this money"? I still don't get it.
It's a nice way of saying it. I'll tell it to you in simple terms.
Please do.
If you would have, this is it. It's me coming to you and saying, you know, Lindsay,
yes.
Just listen to this eye.
Go on.
God, you know, not too long ago, I bought your Sasol at 420 rand a share.
Oh, so I'm your client now, am I? I'm playing the client.
Yes. Yeah, you're a client.
Okay.
And I say, well, the share is now, where is it? It's 130 rand. So, you know, you've lost 270 rand a share. But I say, you know what I'm going to do, Lindsay? Well, we're just going to write it off. Okay. So I'm going to take your portfolio and I'm going to reset your value at 140. Okay.
And I say, oh, you're going to write it off. So in other words, you take the loss, David. Is that what you're saying to me?
No. You take the loss. Except you take the loss. I feel better because I'm wiping it off my sheet. I don't have to look at the 420 anymore. So from next month, I just look at 140. And every time it goes up, I'll phone you up and say, oh, we're doing better. It's gone from 140 to 150. But forget about the 420. So that's exactly what happened. Shareholders funded these projects at, you know, I'm using the hypothetical example that we're saying now, at 420. That's what they put in. And now management, in fact, what has happened, Lindsay,
and
again, I hope I'm not confusing everybody, the market has already adjusted for those nuts. And all they're doing is bringing their asset or their balance sheet in line with the market price. You know,
I don't know how you accountants live with yourselves, actually. I don't know.
No, I know.
How do you sleep at night?
Well, you see what happens is I take over the company and I'm the manager. And I say, well, I'm not going to be rude. You can't punish me for what these chaps did. Do you know what I mean? Don't punish me.
Yeah.
You know, I came in when the share price was 140 and look what it is now. It's 160. So make sure you reward me. You know, so it's smoke and mirrors. And there was a very good article this morning in Business Day where they've identified all the write-offs. You know, there's 250 billion rands worth of write-offs that have taken place in the market. So with a lot of them to do with Anglo American, you know, writing off Woodsmith, which is the nutrition, what's it, the nutrients company that Mark Cutifani bought. They've written off, you know, quite a lot of the other assets. PGMs, the platinum mines, have written down their assets and so on. They mentioned Froneman. They mentioned a whole lot of other businesses that have impaired their assets. 250 billion, you know, has been written off.
It's a lot in South African terms,
Pick and Pay. Mm. Yeah. It included Pick and Pay, you know, writing down a number of shops that they own and so on. It's a very easy way. It's a very easy way of just writing off the past and failing to recognize, you know, what was done. It's a blight on previous management. But I've never seen anybody fired or kicked out or thrown off a building or, you know, given concrete slippers or whatever it is.
Yes.
None of that happened.
And you don't see them not getting a Christmas, not a Christmas bonus, but a bonus, you know. Because they say, well, if I wasn't there, it would have been worse. That's the stock argument from these people. We've got in there. We've lost 56 billion. But if Johnny hadn't have been there, we might have lost 75 billion. So here's a bonus for you. Go and have a lovely time in Plettenberg Bay or the Seychelles or something. Yeah.
That's why I say, my next life, I'm going to take shareholders' funds and just have a wonderful time. I'm not going to manage Linda Williams' portfolio or anybody else. Because you're going to trash me up, I'm going to do a fund where I don't know who owns the fund, but I'll just go for Kira, you know, just have fun. Yeah, so I'll lose my reputation, but have lots of fun.
Yeah, who needs a reputation as long as you're having fun? David, did you read anything over the weekend apart from the Business Day this morning?
Most of it is around politics. I'm finding the American politics absolutely fascinating.
It is.
I mean,
it's riveting, you know, actually.
It is. The fact that the polls are now pointing towards Kamala. Mm. Kamala,
you have to call it. You can't say Kamala. That's what Trump says, and it's wrong. It's Kamala. Yeah.
And I think as much as people hate her, she's kind of brought she's brought some kind of refreshment into U.S. politics. People are enlivened again. We've forgotten about Biden. We don't even know who he is. You know, this old man that's sitting there. So it just shows you how quick things can turn. So it's how it turns out, I don't know. But I think Trump's probably got issues because he can't, you know, he can't go back on his, she's as dumb as a rock. You know, people are saying, okay, we're tired of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It might work with a couple of Vikings who follow you in deer skins. But I mean, you know, for most of the intelligent people, I think they're not going to buy that anymore. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting. There's got to be a bit of concern in the Republican camp on how to handle this. And you've got to have proper policies. You know, you can't use that hate and an old man running the place. You know, you can't use what he did to gain popularity and swing people around. I think it's changing, which is quite fascinating.
It is. And you know, talking about Biden, as a certifiable insomniac, I was watching CNN at around about 2 in the morning a couple of nights ago, and they have a program called The Whole Story, where they dig into matters that are in the public domain daily, but they go behind the scenes, and they tracked when Biden first decided to run in 2020, before 2020. And it took 2 or 3 years for him to do it because he's very organized and very meticulous. He doesn't make snap decisions. And then his family were saying, you've got to do it. I mean, his grandchildren were saying, you've got to do it, Pops. And anyway, he did it, and he won, of course. But then they track his decline, yeah. And particularly in the last year, and they show everything. Do you remember we were joking disrespectfully about him walking like a puppet from Gerry Anderson's Thunderbirds from the 1960s? And this chap says, he loves him. He was my mentor. He was my guide. He's a great president and everything. But suddenly I started noticing he walks differently. And when he walks onto the helicopter example, he has to have two or three people around him so people can't see him walking so strangely. Yeah. And he speaks differently. And you see him sitting there staring ahead. His eyes are looking weird. And they said it's almost been daily in the last few months that he's declined, so he had to go. It was very sad to see. And my attitude was, that's someone's grandfather. You know, let him have an easy life now. Stop being nasty to him and get him out of there, not for political reasons, but for personal reasons. The other thing that's really disturbed me this week, by the way, he did a CBS interview over the weekend, which is okay. I mean, he didn't make any faux pas, but, yeah, it was all right. J.D. Vance stood up yesterday and said, I don't think the Fed should have control over monetary policy. I think political entities, I think he called them, should have a bigger say in monetary policy of the United States. So then now, it's all very well if you're a billionaire, not that Vance is, but Trump, his boss is, because Trump has an indebted so-called empire. It's great to cut interest rates by 50 basis points. It eases his burden. And that's what they're getting at here. That, to me, David, was the most disturbing thing I read over the weekend.
Yeah. He's gone down in estimation, Vance. And I think, you know, his policies that they actually allow him to say things like this, I think is very worrying. You know, particularly that he is the heir apparent, and he does represent, call it the New Republican Party, which is actually a very worrying issue. And I just hope those swing things away. You know, from the Republicans or this Republican Party. I don't know. It's, that politicians should, you know, that's our stuff that you'd find in Africa. Yeah. You know, should have more say about the Fed. That was why you have the Fed. That's why, you know, you've got the same with the Supreme Court. And I think that's also a deep, deep worry. The way that the Supreme Court acts, because that was supposed to be the circuit breaker. What do you hear? The balancing issue. People who really sit in judgment of what the politicians are doing. But this is very, very politically leaning. So, and they're there for life.
I know, it's a strange one, isn't it? It's a job for life. It's like growing up in South Africa in the 1970s or something and getting a job with Standard Bank or Anglo American. And you know that you're going to be there for the rest of your life as long as you keep your nose clean. Exactly. David, not much else going on because people are waiting. We're always waiting for something. We're waiting for the inflation data in the United States. So it's very, very quiet.
I have to tell you one thing.
Yes.
Just on our side, I went through quite a few results today because there was, there was Avenge and Cecil and Supergroup and Italtile and a couple of companies that are smaller businesses than that. The one that really disturbed me and was Supergroup. You know, this is a good little business. It's fleet management, it's logistics and so on. But when they explain, when you see the problems that they had, and the one point they made out is that the exporters, from Africa, I would assume the Democratic Republic, the Congo or maybe, Zambia particularly or Zimbabwe, whatever it is, are now shipping their coal, their copper, and other mineral exports through either Walvis Bay or alternatively up to Dar es Salaam. This used to go down to Durban.
And what is the problem there? The logistics before they get to the port or both?
No, everything, a mess. You know, the turnaround at Durban, the congestion at Durban, a whole lot of issues like that. You know, besides there were border delays, things like that. I think export volumes are falling as well, which is not really their fault. That's the economy. But I think there are a lot of issues there that come out, as to what the cost of the government, the present government, and their indolence, you know, is costing us. And the trouble is that once you start that, you never go back. You know, well, we find, you know, Walvis Bay is better, whatever it is. How are you going to get them to come back? You've got to now fight to get your customers back. So they're disturbing issues. I know this is not new, but I'm saying, you know, when you read the results, you're actually able to kind of calculate or work out exactly how much it has cost. So Italtal, yes, was another. I mean, yeah, that's more consumers under pressure. It's the difficulties of trying to make a business work when there's no underlying demand, a lot of competition.
Okay. Yeah. So Sasol terrible, Supergroup disturbing, Italtal okay, yeah. But yeah, nothing that you would say, I'm going to sell my Nvidia and buy a South African stock.
No. You brought up quite an interesting point. It's exactly that. Because certainly not South African. I find that their big moves now, you know, to promote the GNU, the Government of National Unity, and how to turn the economy around. And I'm saying, Lindsay, you give me your money. I can't go to school on your, I can't pay my school fees on your pension. And I've got to be very careful. So I have to think carefully about, and there's nothing, even in the US, it's too early. You know, because rates are still relatively high.
Very high. 5.25% to 5.5% guidance rate. That's a really big number for America.
So the only companies that are doing okay, you know, I found when I went through the list, it was all the tech companies did brilliantly, regardless of what the analysts start to talk about, as we mentioned earlier in the program, you know, about worries about the promise of AI. If you go through, Eli Lilly came out, you know, the fatty drugs, as I call them. I mean, they've been outstanding results from demand. And then, you know, there are a couple of luxury companies. The ones that stood out for me were Hermes and Ferrari. Mm. You know, still brilliant businesses, proper luxury businesses, which are not affected by the bottom end of the market not being able to afford their bags. So you've got to stick like that, you know. You can't change. It's too early.
I remember walking down New Bond Street once when I had a job and I was earning money, and the Hermes store was there. And I walked in and I looked at the ties, and I bought an orange tie with koalas on it, koalas in the trees. And I remember paying something outrageous in those days. It was the 1980s, something like £120 for a tie. And I felt very proud because it was a statement purchase. It was a badge of success, if you like. But, you know, you can't – that badge, that Hermes badge and the Ferrari mark and everything, you can't ever replicate that. It doesn't matter how many Chinese car companies come along. They're never, ever going to be Ferrari.
You were working in Mayfair, hey? You were working in Mayfair and wearing Hermes tires.
I was working in St. James's, actually. And so I would walk across German Street and then Piccadilly and then go up New Bond Street. Oh, it's a wonderful world. I mean, you've got places like Asprey and every single...
And the worst thing.
There was some.
You go for lunch and you spill a little bit of the pizza oil or something, whatever, from your pasta, and you got this little mark. And even if you send it a dry cleaner, dead. Yeah. You know what I mean? Ours dead.
But some of those shops, David, were so intimidating. Yeah. They would have a chap in a uniform and a hat at the door. Yeah. And so if some yobbo from Ipswich or something came along and said, "Hello, mate, can I come in?" And they'd say, "I'm sorry, sir, we're closed at the moment. We've got some renovations going on." They'd make up something. I couldn't go into places like that. But
commissionaire. They were commissionaires with a sergeant stripe or the RSM, the Royal, you know, the Regimental Sergeant Major kind of badge on. And they had these black shiny boots and cap and very, very austere-looking men, and exactly like that, polite, but basically telling you, sorry, that was me as well, especially Linda. You know, my wife came, she would wear jeans and things like that, and she had no shame at all. She'd try getting us, stung go in, you know, don't humiliate yourself.
Very good. David, the Olympics is over.
And I'm in this daughter.
The next week we'll be talking about football, and I'll be down in the dumps for various reasons that need not detain us now. But the Olympics is over. I'm sort of glad it's over. I was getting a little bit over Olympics. Yeah. But I have to say, of all the, if you had to say what was the Olympics like, I would say beautifully organised, and the endeavours of the athletes were beyond expectations. The sporting endeavour that those young people managed to achieve was quite extraordinary, David. And it was summed up, as you said, by the Ethiopian-born Dutch marathon runner. Yeah. It was a sprint finish after 42 kilometres.
Yeah. No, you got no idea. You know, why, what was so... You remember Emil Zatopek back in the 50s, and that you might be before your age.
No, funnily enough, I don't, but anyway.
Now, if you look him up, he was an incredible long-distance runner. I think he participated, I don't know whether he got gold in all three, but he was in the 5,000 meters, he was in the 10,000, and then he thought, I may as well run the marathon, and he won the marathon.
Gosh.
And this woman did exactly that. She got bronze in the, and you know who you're running against. You're running against incredible opposition. So you can't just stroll in. She got bronze for the 5. She got bronze for the 10. And she runs a marathon 2 days after competing in the 10 and just creams it. You know, she just hung in there. And what a finish. And you know, it's got to go to her. You know, if you had to pick a Victor Ludorum or whatever the female version or however they say it, Victrix Ludorum. She was outstanding, absolutely outstanding.
And so humble, you know, afterwards as well.
This is a marathon. This is 42 k's.
Yeah,
you know, you're running. This is not putting the shot or throwing a discus or anything. It's an absolutely amazing feat.
Yeah. Oh. There was so much. There were so many good moments. I think Paris did it very, very well indeed. Interesting to see. I only watched the BBC coverage. Former Olympians who form part of their commentary team, they said, "How do you rate Paris?" And said, "It's been fantastic, but Sydney and London are still numbers one and two." Paris was brilliant. The closing ceremony was a little bit disjointed to me. You've been tucked up in bed before, but I watched the whole lot as usual.
I had to.
Yeah.
But I have to. You have to compare the two cultures. You know, you've got Paris. You know, you see Paris and the history, the Louvre, and all the places that the impressionist paintings, and then they switch to LA, where you got Snoop Dogg and Dr.
Well, that's what lifted it for me. They had some mediocre French pub band strutting around. They were scruffy, and people were dancing to it. I didn't know who they were. They said the iconic French band Phoenix. And I watched this and thought, I can go and see that down the local on a Friday night or something, which annoyed me. And so I started getting very annoyed. Then I got annoyed when the Star Spangled Banner was sung. And I can't bear it where they hold that note on the word free, free, and it goes on for ages and their lips tremble. And so that, and then when Tom Cruise came along, I understand now why they did it, because it's injecting the Hollywood theme.
Yeah,
to,
it was Mission Impossible.
Yes, and he jumped down and he's great. I mean, 62, I can't even walk down the stairs, let alone jump off a building and abseil. Yeah. But what was startling about Tom Cruise is, I mean, his eyes are disappearing. He's had so much work on his face. The vanity of the boy. I mean, come on now. But it was fun. I must admit, I grew into it over the 2 weeks. It was, but I'm glad it's over. It was exhausting to watch. Yeah. David, football starts on Friday night with Manchester United, and then a full weekend. And this time next Monday, we'll be speaking about gosh, I hope nothing too disastrous for Ipswich and hopefully Arsenal. It's terrible. Anyway, okay, we'll speak again after the Fed decision on Wednesday with Viv Govender on Thursday. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.